Running a business is no cakewalk, but with SAP Concur Solutions, you can be ready for anything. You can manage travel, expenses, and AP all on one platform that's packed with AI and best practices, and that delivers it all through an easy, clear, I can't believe how simple that is experience. So, while not much can be done about that guy who never fails to burn the microwave popcorn and stink up the entire office, with SAP Concur, you can easily handle almost anything else. Take control of your business finances today at concur.com. That's concur.com. Working remotely, where you are shouldn't dictate what you do. Work from the road by turning your vehicle into a reliable high-speed data Wi-Fi hotspot with AT&T in-car Wi-Fi. On the network that covers more roads than any other carrier, take your work on the road and AT&T will be there to keep you connected. Connect up to 10 devices and stream conference calls, finish up that presentation, or answer last-minute emails. Why wait? Go to att.com/in-car Wi-Fi today for free trial eligibility. Based on independent third-party data, number of devices varies by manufacturer. Always pay careful attention to the road and don't drive distracted. Wi-Fi hotspot intended for passenger use only when vehicle is in operation. Compatible device and vehicle required.
Now, your ideas don't have to wait. Now, they have everything they need to come to life. Dell Technologies and Intel are creating technology that loves ideas, loves expanding your business, and evolving your passions. They push what technology can do, so great ideas can happen right now. Find out how to bring your ideas to life at Dell.com. Welcome to Now.
From BBC Radio 4, Britain's biggest paranormal podcast is going on a road trip.
I thought in that moment, oh my God, we've summoned something from this board.
This is Uncanny USA.
He says, somebody's in the house, and I screamed.
Listen to Uncanny USA wherever you get your BBC podcasts, if you dare.
Brought to you by the reinvented 2012 Camry. It's ready. Are you?
Get in touch with technology with Tech Stuff from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Tech Stuff. My name is Chris Paulette, and I'm an editor at HowStuffWorks.com. Sitting across from me, as usual, is senior writer Jonathan Strickland.
Hey there!
All right, then. So we're going to talk about the latest, except it's not malware to make headlines all over the world.
Yes.
And cause international incidents and all of that.
As of the recording of this podcast, anyway. By the time this podcast goes live, there may be even worse news.
Yeah, it's funny because we were talking about what we wanted to call this, and we thought of all of our flame metaphors and jokes
and puns.
And I was going to make the joke about it being our old flame, and like, except it's new. Except it, as it turns out, it's not. This malware has been making headlines over the past few weeks as of the date of recording on June 1st. And,
2012.
But as it turns out, this brand new, malware, I was going to call it a virus, but let's just call it malware, isn't new at all.
Yeah.
And that's one of the fascinating things about it. But there are many fascinating things.
Yeah. The component file name, the main part, the foundation of this malware may date back as early as 2007, possibly even earlier. And one of the reasons why this is a really fascinating there's so many reasons why this is fascinating malware. One is that it was able to escape attention for so long.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Because you're talking about a file that is capable of doing lots and lots of stuff depending upon what you add to it, which brings us to fascinating thing number two. It's a modular kind of malware.
Yes.
Now, in general, when someone creates some malware, there tends to be a specific goal in mind of the person who's designing it, right? They're thinking, I want to design this malware because what it'll do is it'll allow me to get backdoor access to another person's computer, mm-hmm. and I'll be able to get administrative control of that machine, and then I can create a botnet. That would be one example.
Or I want to record keystrokes so that I can get usernames and passwords for people's accounts and maybe commit identity theft.
Right. Or I want to create a piece of code that will propagate itself across a network, which, you know, on its own is just one thing.
Mm-hmm.
Like, so you might want to add more to it. And historically, hackers and malware programmers have been doing that. They've been creating malware that either complements some other piece of code or it acts as the first step to another piece of code that can, in combination, create whatever the effect is that the hacker wants.
Mm-hmm.
So there might be one part of the code that is designed to help get access to a network, or perhaps it's designed to copy itself once it gets on a network. It might even be to copy itself multiple times on the same machine in order to fill up that machine's memory and hard drive space so that you brick the machine.
Mm-hmm.
It all depends on what the goal is for the hacker. And then there might be some other component that does something else on top of it. Well, what makes Flame so interesting is that it takes this concept to a new level. It's a modular kind of malware,
mm-hmm.
meaning that the basis of Flame is so that you can infect a machine and then you can send a modular tweak to that malware that's now living on the victim's machine and give it specific abilities. So think of it in a way as kind of a very, very much scaled down operating system.
Kind of,
it's,
yes.
It's a platform.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so it's not a full operating system in the traditional sense. It's not like it's taking over your operating system and interacting with your computer's hardware. It's just sort of on a high level the same basic concept. It's acting as a platform that other applications can operate on top of and affect how your computer behaves. And it all depends on which modules you send to the Flame Foundation that will allow it to do whatever it is you want it to do.
Right, right. When we talked about hackers before on the show, we've discussed people who are known as script kiddies, and that's what they sort of it's sort of a derogatory term for people who are very, very basic hackers,
yeah.
who are intent on causing mischief. And the reason they're called that is not. Well, the reason I want to talk about why they're called that is because in order to create malware, it doesn't take a whole lot of code to do this. You could basically say, write a script that says, look, I want you to erase, you know, I want you to copy all the addresses in the address book, email a copy of this script to everybody in the address book, and then wipe the hard drive clean. Ha ha. It
yeah.
really doesn't have to be that complex. And one of the things that, is also interesting about Flame is that, as Jonathan said, it's modular, but it takes up 20 megabytes of space. Now, in our terms today, that's not a particularly large file. A lot of people have broadband. It's not an issue to download a 20 megabyte file, but you really don't need that much code to have a basic virus or Trojan.
Right.
This is extensively written code. It's very sophisticated code to allow additional modules to operate on the main system. And that's why organizations that have been affected by it believe that it might be state-sponsored. We should point out, too, that this is not something that you're likely to get on your PC. This is aimed at very high-level government-run systems, apparently.
Yeah, if you're a high-level government official, then maybe your PC would be at risk.
Yeah,
and to be more specific, if you're a high-level government official in a country in the Middle East,
yes,
because that tends to be or possibly Hungary, because those tend to be the countries that have been targeted. Specifically, Iran and Israel have had the largest number of infected computers, but there are other countries that also seem to have it, or at least those are the countries that have computers running this software.
Mm-hmm. I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
I was going to say also the West Bank,
yes.
Palestinian West Bank,
yep.
and Lebanon are known to be
right.
places where this has
and
been
then,
found.
Oddly enough, in Hungary, although I was about to go into a Renaissance Festival speak, I've managed to avoid it this entire season, and I almost said, I know not why that is so.
Also, Austria, Russia, Hong Kong, UAE. So,
now, some of these may be unintentional targets, right? They may not be the targeted computers.
Yeah.
Because the conclusion we draw is whichever countries seem to have the highest rates of infection are more likely to be the targeted countries. Of course, we can't know that for sure. It may be based upon just the behaviors of the people who work within that country, but it's a fair indicator. Now let's talk a little bit about what this malware can actually do and then why someone might use it to target those particular countries.
Well, some people feel that it's a relative of Stuxnet or Dooku, both of which have been known to circulate in the same part of the world. Stuxnet was aimed apparently at power plants and other infrastructure stuff.
I think it's safe to say Stuxnet was specifically engineered to target Iranian nuclear power facilities.
That's the way it's presented, yes.
Because
I didn't write it, so I don't know.
One of the functions of Stuxnet was to change the rate of revolutions per minute for centrifuges.
Mm-hmm.
And the whole idea was that by changing that speed at which the centrifuge turns within a nuclear power facility, you could cause a failure of that part of the facility, thus effectively shutting it down. Presumably, if you could get it to spin erratically enough, you could cause more of a catastrophic failure than just, slowing down the program.
Mm-hmm.
But that appears to be what Stuxnet was all about. Now we still don't have official news of who was behind it, although, of course, there are a lot of likely candidates. But along those lines, Flame is a little different. Stuxnet, of course, was looking at least from what we understand, physically sabotaging a power facility.
Mm-hmm.
Flame looks like it's more about spying upon various targets.
That's true. It is also written like those other two pieces of malware using a scripting language called Lua. I haven't ever heard that pronounced. Lua, which is often used actually in the gaming industry.
Yeah, in fact, Lua is an obscure enough language that it might actually be one of the reasons why the hackers may have chosen Lua as one of the languages they worked in is because it was obscure enough to not raise red flags immediately.
Mm-hmm.
It wouldn't look like other kinds of malware just at first glance. And so that might be a reason why the hackers chose it. Or it may just be that the hackers were really, really familiar with that particular language and it could do what they needed it to do. But a lot of the analysis I've read suggests that perhaps the reason for picking it was because it was less recognizable.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. But Flame does record system information about the systems that it's on.
Boy, howdy does it. It's kind of an catch-all.
Mm-hmm.
And again, a lot of this depends on what modules are installed on top of Flame. Think about Flame in a way like you would an operating system like iOS.
Mm-hmm.
In that, iOS can do lots of stuff, but it can do more stuff when you add apps to it.
Right.
The apps give you very specific features.
It's the way that computers work.
Exactly. Chris and I both happen to have an Android phone,
mm-hmm.
different Android phones, and that I would wager that many of the apps that Chris has, I do not have, and vice versa, and there are a few that we might have in common.
Mm-hmm.
And that's because Chris wants his phone to do a certain set of things, and I want my phone to do a certain set of things. Hackers are the same way. They may want their malware to do certain things in certain situations, and they don't necessarily need everything. It doesn't have to be a kitchen sink approach. So that's kind of the idea behind Flame. So some of the things it can do as far as cyber espionage go, it can do keyboard activity. So a key logger function like Chris was talking about earlier, this is what tracks what keys are being pressed. Usually you use this so that you can find out things like passwords and that sort of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
It can monitor network traffic, so it can actually see what computers the infected computer is communicating with and possibly even sniff out that data. It can take screenshots. So the person on the other end of this, this connection can get a look at what the user is looking at whenever they're using the computer. Also very important if that particular computer is used in a high security environment.
Mm-hmm.
It can even record audio. It can use a computer's microphone and record audio. So just imagine it's like bugging an office, except you don't have to put a bug in there,
mm-hmm.
which is amazing. You know, think about it. There are offices that are in such high security areas that there are frequent bug sweeps
mm-hmm.
where the company or government agency will have someone come through and search for any electronic bugs that might have been planted there in order to record conversations. Well, this gets around that. It turns the person's own computer into that recording instrument.
Mm-hmm.
It can even do things like record Skype conversations. And the one I saw that I thought was particularly clever was there's apparently a module that will allow if the computer has Bluetooth capability, it will become a beacon, a Bluetooth beacon, and will try to connect with Bluetooth devices that are within range and download information from them.
Interesting.
So if you have a smartphone, you're a government official, and you've got a smartphone, you've got Bluetooth enabled so that you can use your cyborg earpiece that everyone tends to use, then your computer might try to do a Bluetooth handshake with your device and pull information from your device into the computer so it can send it off to the hacker. So it's all about gathering information. Now, there's also been some suggestions that perhaps this is related as well to another kind of malware. In fact, that malware may just be a module on top of Flame called Wiper, which does exactly what you would think it does. It wipes data from a device. So it may also not just be about data collection, but also destroying data. And in fact, it does look like there's been some data loss, particularly in Iran, that may be due to this particular malware.
Mm-hmm. It is important to note, too, that this is not the only piece of modular malware out there. It is especially unusual in the size of this malware.
And sophistication,
And sophistication. This is sort of an indication that the game might be afoot, if you will. Basically,
elementary, my dear Chris.
Exactly. What's going on is, and I think this is part of the reason that people are so, if you follow the tech press or the tech media, let's say, you've probably seen a lot about this in the past few weeks. And I think the reason for that is because it's captured our imagination and it's made us all realize that electronic espionage is here. And people are using it, and it's not the exception anymore. I have the feeling that, basically, I am certainly not the only one from my reading that people seem to feel that this is state-sponsored espionage, and that this kind of thing is going to become more and more and more common as the years go on, because this is the way the world does business.
Yeah,
and I mean all kinds of business. Personally, I think the reason that it's designed to capture webcam stuff is so that they can post videos on YouTube of high-level officials dancing to Lady Gaga videos in their closed offices that they've had swept for bugs so that they won't get caught doing it.
That's ridiculous. That's Taylor Swift videos.
Ah, I see.
The other thing about this is that I think it's interesting if you think that this malware may have been around since 2007.
Mm-hmm.
It shows that hackers were of the same mindset as Steve Jobs, because they saw that apps were the next big thing.
Oh.
No, really, seriously, when you think about it, it is kind of amazing, because they were thinking, well, let's make this a very flexible, adaptable malware system so that we can use it in multiple use cases. And we don't have to send the whole thing to everyone. It did, you know, just like other malware, it attempts to cover its tracks as much as possible so that way, you know, it can stay on an infected computer as long as possible.
And it's very good at it if it's been around for years.
Yeah. And just now we're talking about it. And also it spreads kind of in a way similar to other types of malware. You might think, well, how is that initial entry into a system? How is that accomplished? Well, there are a couple of different ways you could do it. There's some suggestion that perhaps it was a spear phishing attempt,
mm-hmm.
which is where you have a specific target in mind,
mm-hmm.
and you have enough information about that target to be able to create an email that could tempt that target into executing a file that they probably shouldn't have done.
Right. Phishing is with a PH.
Yes.
Is a social engineering tool, mm-hmm. to gather information. You've probably, just about everybody, I'm sure, who is listening to this has had a phishing email show up in their spam box where it says, hey, your bank account has been compromised and we need you to send us your information. Mm-hmm. And you go, you know, I don't have an account at this bank and I've never had an account at this bank. I always chuckle at those because I think, nice try.
Yeah.
But that is what phishing is known for. If you were to click on that link and go further and enter your private information in there, they would be able to use that in identity theft, operation.
Yeah.
But spear phishing is specifically targeted, as Jonathan said, to a certain person. So it is especially effective because it says, hey, Jonathan Strickland, we know that you have an account here, this is a problem with your account. You need to enter your information. Please send us your stuff.
There's been some unusual activity on your account.
I love that one.
Which is even better because the unusual activity comes true.
Yeah.
Because exactly. You go and you check your account and the next thing you know, you have actually given over the information to the people who will generate the unusual activity on your account.
Yeah. Don't ever follow those links.
Yeah. No. It's better to go to those sites directly through your browser, as long as you don't have, the DNS changer malware on your computer, which sends you to the wrong browser anyway, or wrong site rather anyway.
Right.
So anyway, getting back to this, spear phishing is a very, very possible way that this initially got out into the wild.
Mm-hmm.
However, it can also be spread through USB thumbsticks, which means getting physical access to someone's computer, not always the easiest method.
No, but that's exactly what they did with Stuxnet, apparently.
Yeah.
Was they snuck it into nuclear power facilities on a USB flash drive.
Which, you know, it's not necessarily the easiest way, but it is. I mean, I guess it all depends on your target. Because you could either do it yourself, where you are, you know, you pose as, say, a technician saying, I have to install this new software onto your computer so that we can maintain security.
Perhaps you're Klaus Hergesheimer checking radiation shields.
Or you could actually mail a thumbstick to a person and say, here is the file you wanted, and have them install it themselves.
Sometimes it's that easy.
Yeah, sometimes that works. I mean, because, you know, people don't necessarily think, oh, there could be something bad on this thumb drive. By the way, there could be something bad on that thumb drive. You know, that's another possibility. And also, once it gets in the network, there were other ways of leveraging the network to help infect other computers, one of which I saw was using a printer spooling protocol,
mm-hmm.
where certain printers, you know, you could send the malware through the printer queue, and other computers, as they connect to the printer queue, could be infected that way. Which is kind of interesting. But that means that you already have to get into the network initially in order to take advantage of something like that.
Mm-hmm.
So in other words, you can't just necessarily attack straight through the printer. Although I suppose you could if it was a printer that had internet connectivity and you had the, you know, password to get into that.
Mm-hmm.
But at any rate, it propagates through those ways. And apparently, it will only do so under the direction of the hackers.
Mm-hmm.
So this is not the kind of malware that will just copy itself an infinite number of times and just send it to every single contact within a computer's database.
Right.
Instead, it's a very controlled attack, which is, again, another reason why The analysts think this could be state-sponsored, because typically if you have someone who's just interested in either creating as much trouble as possible or just trying to make a profit off whatever it is they're doing, they're probably less likely to have this sort of controlled approach where they're targeting specific computers. Because why do that when you could go with a blanket bomb approach and just infect everyone you possibly can?
Mm-hmm.
This appears to be much more of a precision attack. So that tends to suggest a state-sponsored approach. Now, by that we mean that some government has gone out and hired programmers to create this malware with the intent of using it on some other nation's computers, possibly computers within their own nation. I mean, it all depends on what the government's motives are. And then they're going to gather information and analyze it and make their own plans based upon what they see. So typical spy stuff, as opposed to, say, a group of group of hackers that just want to get as much information as possible in order to make as much money or as much trouble as they can.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Running a business is no cakewalk. There is a ton to keep track of. Employees to keep happy, spending to control, travel to plan, and on top of it all, nobody knows exactly what the future holds. Your finance team always has to be ready to change. But with SAP Concur Solutions, you can be ready for anything. You can manage travel, expenses, and AP all on one platform that's packed with AI and best practices, and that delivers it all through an easy, clear, I can't believe how simple that is, experience. And you can finally say goodbye to the costly mistakes and risks that come from manual work and spreadsheets. So, while not much can be done about that guy who never fails to burn the microwave popcorn and stink up the entire office, with SAP Concur, you can easily handle almost anything else. Take control of your business finances today at concur.com. That's concur.com. Working remotely, where you are shouldn't dictate what you do. Work from the road by turning your vehicle into a reliable high-speed data Wi-Fi hotspot with AT&T in-car Wi-Fi. On the network that covers more roads than any other carrier, take your work on the road and AT&T will be there to keep you connected. Connect up to 10 devices and stream conference calls, finish up that presentation, or answer last-minute emails. Why wait? Go to att.com/in-car Wi-Fi today for free trial eligibility. Based on independent third-party data, number of devices varies by manufacturer. Always pay careful attention to the road and don't drive distracted. Wi-Fi hotspot intended for passenger use only when vehicle is in operation. Compatible device and vehicle required.
Now, your ideas don't have to wait. Now, they have everything they need to come to life. Dell Technologies and Intel are creating technology that loves ideas, loves expanding your business, and evolving your passions. They push what technology can do, so great ideas can happen right now. Find out how to bring your ideas to life at Dell.com. Welcome to Now.
I'm Katya Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.
Yeah, the country that has asserted the state-sponsored claim more than any that I've seen is Iran.
Yes.
Who blames Israel and the United States for the attack.
And there was a statement from an Israeli government official that I think inadvertently kind of gave the implication that Israel was directly involved. But I don't think that was the intention of the statement.
Well, one way or the other, I'm sure it wasn't.
Right. But the government official essentially said, we would, this is sort of I'm paraphrasing here. This is the world we're in. And if we think these tactics are going to work, we're going to use them,
mm-hmm.
which essentially sounded like an admission, but the Israeli government very quickly said, no, 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 we deny that we have anything to do with this.
However, we could write a much more sophisticated program than that. No, I'm kidding.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, they're saying that they wouldn't just because they did or did not launch this. This is the kind of thing that we're going to see more of, which is what the analysts have been saying too. It was very unusual too because the organization known as F-Secure, which is known antivirus organization in Europe, was contacted by the Iranian Computer Emergency Response Team for assistance with that, but apparently it never went through. But they did contact them, which is kind of unusual because usually Iran is kind of tight-lipped about these kinds of things until they can say something about it. But they were asking for help initially. As Jonathan was saying a minute ago, the attacks have been very targeted. And we're not talking about hundreds of thousands or millions of computers that are infected like other malware has.
Yeah,
we're talking about a few thousand at most.
Yeah, there may be fewer than 1,000, in fact,
yes,
across the entire world, with the greatest concentration, like we said, being in the Middle East. And it's very possible that this is not necessarily one of those global things that everyone should freak out about. What they should freak out about, rather than the nature of the threat that Flame poses,
mm-hmm,
is the nature of the threat that the type of malware Flame is poses.
Yeah,
so in other words,
exactly.
In other words, it's not Flame we need to worry about. It's the fact that now we know. Actually, it's better that we know, but
it's now
like
we
know.
It's a proof of concept.
Right. There's a proof of concept here. There's this malware that can exist that can be incredibly effective at gathering information. And who's to say that the next version of this isn't already out there? In fact, it very well may be out there right now.
Oh, and sure.
I'd be amazed if it weren't out there right now, to tell you the truth. And it's possible that it could be spying on more than just government or infrastructure type of agencies.
Yeah.
And also, even though this particular kind of malware is all about gathering information that would be, espionage type stuff,
mm-hmm,
there's nothing stopping anyone else from taking that same model and applying it for things like stealing identities, stealing bank account information.
Sure.
You could easily take this same approach and apply it to the very stereotypical means of what malware tends to do.
Right.
And it could wreak a lot of havoc. And I think when it comes to gathering information, like all that information, like listening into phone calls and stuff, I think that's probably not something that the average person needs to worry about, simply because if you're using a typical virus attack,
mm-hmm,
where you're trying to hit as wide an audience as possible, it doesn't make a whole lot of sense to be filtering through that much information. You would have so much information hitting you that the signal to noise ratio would be out of control,
mm-hmm,
right? So you'd have, well, I was really hoping to get something I could use as blackmail for this guy, but I have to first sit through this 3-hour conversation he had with his grandmother about the sweater she knitted for him. And that really is not giving me the juicy details I need in order to put the screws to this guy. So,
mm-hmm,
I mean, it's a very real problem. Now, granted, when you're talking about state-sponsored, you've got entire departments that can sift through that, not to mention access to possible computers that can filter through data much more effectively than people can.
Mm-hmm.
But when you're talking about, like, hackers who are just trying to get data, about a person, it's a different story. Now, what they could do is, if they wanted to infect a lot of computers and just cause mischief, then you're talking about some pretty serious issues too. Like, you could talk about, having computers have failures, talking about botnets, that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Now, do we need to worry that our computers are all infected? Well, what you need to do is do the same thing that we recommend in every podcast we ever talk about when it comes to malware.
Back up your hard drive and use virus protection software?
Use virus protection software. Use a firewall.
Or antivirus protection. protect those viruses. Wait, no, that's not what I meant.
Well, protect yourself from viruses, yes. You want antivirus software, reliable antivirus software.
Mm-hmm.
You want to keep it up to date. You want to keep your operating system up to date because as you patch your operating system, it plugs up vulnerabilities that get discovered over time.
Mm-hmm. Because that's what they're doing, really. A hacker is not necessarily somebody who's evil, but it's somebody who takes something apart to re-engineer it or to find a different use for it or to find something that's wrong with it. And in this case, what the computer hackers are doing is finding flaws in an operating system, and it can be any operating system.
Yeah. Now, in the case of Flame, we should point out these are Windows-based machines that
yes.
are being attacked by Flame. We didn't talk about that in the first part of the podcast, but
that's
they are
point.
Windows-based machines.
Mm-hmm.
But yes, any operating system has vulnerabilities because operating systems are built by humans,
mm-hmm.
and humans don't always think of every contingency. It's just impossible to do. And while you are building an operating system or building any system, you're looking at it from one perspective. You're thinking, how can I make this as secure as possible?
Mm-hmm.
The hacker is looking at it thinking, how can I get into that system? And they're going to start looking at ways that you could not have thought of because they're going to see what you have thought of and go beyond that.
Mm-hmm.
It's just that's the way the game works. But then as vulnerabilities are discovered, then you have the flip-flop. You know, you've got the reaction to it where you plug that vulnerability. Now, that might create other vulnerabilities or maybe that other vulnerabilities exist that you have not yet discovered.
Mm-hmm.
But that's why it's important for you to make sure that you update your operating system as updates become available.
Yes.
I know it can be irritating, especially if you're on a slower connection, to have to update your operating system every week. And you're shutting down your computer and it says installing update 1 of 33. And you're like, I wanted to go home.
Yep.
But still, it's better to do it and to maintain as high a level of security as you can. And ultimately, the most important thing, I think, besides the antivirus software and plugging the operating system, is engage in good behavior in the sense of don't open strange links, don't execute files that are sent to you from people you don't know. If it's sent to you by someone who does you do know, make sure that you contact that person first and say, hey, I got this email from you. It had this file in it. Is this what I think it is? Is it cool?
Yeah.
Because it may be that your friend's computer has been infected and that you're getting a file that is automatically generated because it's gone through that friend's contact list and you happen to be on it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, think the way hackers think and make sure you don't engage in those high risk behaviors that hackers target because they've proven to be effective tools.
Mm-hmm.
And if you manage to do that, if you avoid the high risk behaviors and you keep your antivirus software up to date and you keep your operating system up to date, you have done as much as you can to prevent this sort of stuff from infecting your computer.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't mean that it's foolproof, but it dramatically decreases those chances.
Running a business is no cakewalk. There is a ton to keep track of. Employees to keep happy, spending to control, travel to plan, and on top of it all, nobody knows exactly what the future holds. Your finance team always has to be ready to change. But with SAP Concur Solutions, you can be ready for anything. You can manage travel, expenses, and AP all on one platform that's packed with AI and best practices. And that delivers it all through an easy, clear, I can't believe how simple that is, experience. And you can finally say goodbye to the costly mistakes and risks that come from manual work and spreadsheets. So, while not much can be done about that guy who never fails to burn the microwave popcorn and stink up the entire office, with SAP Concur, you can easily handle almost anything else. Take control of your business finances today at concur.com. That's concur.com. Working remotely, where you are shouldn't dictate what you do. Work from the road by turning your vehicle into a reliable high-speed data Wi-Fi hotspot with AT&T in-car Wi-Fi. On the network that covers more roads than any other carrier, take your work on the road and AT&T will be there to keep you connected. Connect up to 10 devices and stream conference calls, finish up that presentation, or answer last-minute emails. Why wait? Go to att.com/in-car Wi-Fi today for free trial eligibility.
Based on independent third-party data, number of devices varies by manufacturer. Always pay careful attention to the road and don't drive distracted. Wi-Fi hotspot intended for passenger use only when vehicle is in operation. Compatible device and vehicle required.
Now, your ideas don't have to wait. Now, they have everything they need to come to life. Dell Technologies and Intel are creating technology that loves ideas, loves expanding your business, and evolving your passions. They push what technology can do, so great ideas can happen right now. Find out how to bring your ideas to life at Dell.com. Welcome to Now.
From BBC Radio 4, Britain's biggest paranormal podcast is going on a road trip.
I thought in that moment, oh my God, we've summoned something from this board.
This is Uncanny USA.
He says, somebody's in the house, and I screamed.
Listen to Uncanny USA wherever you get your BBC podcasts, if you dare.
Yeah, as Jonathan was saying, there could be contingencies. Flame actually looks for antivirus software, especially the more common manufacturers' software, and it looks for things that are going to report unusual activity, online activity. There are applications for, I think, pretty much every operating system that will say, hey, this program is sending a message out. Is it supposed to be sending a message out? And I've seen malware for multiple operating systems be able to detect that. So it's looking for anything that's going to report on its activity or try to eliminate it. And of course, if it's something as sophisticated as Flame, the software can be updated by the hackers to get around virus detection software.
Right.
So the vulnerabilities that initially allowed Flame to operate have apparently been patched.
Yeah.
And were some time ago. Again, if the people who had been using those operating systems had patched their software, it would have made it a lot more difficult. Now, if the hacker has a backdoor into that software, then he or she can say, okay, this vulnerability has been patched, but this one is still open. From now on, use this door out into the internet instead of the one that you were using before.
Yeah.
And that allows them to stay one step ahead. But again, if you take those steps, to keep your, antivirus and your operating system patched as often as you can, as it's done regularly, then you stand a much better chance at preventing something like this from happening.
Yeah. Yeah. Again, not foolproof, but at least it decreases that percentage.
It's fascinating too to look at these modules because it's such an amazing architecture. Mm-hmm. It's obvious that the people who wrote the software intended to set up shop in the operating systems of the people whose computers were infected by the software, by this malware, and they intended to stay there for as long as they could and record as much information as they could about the operating system, about anything that they could connect to. So they were playing for real.
Yeah. The only thing, I think the only indicator that shows that they were not completely fully baked when it rolled out is that it does not let you play Angry Birds. Otherwise, I think, it was a pretty strong modular system, but until the system has Angry Birds on it, I consider it incomplete.
All right, then.
All right. So that kind of sums up the knowledge we have as of the recording of this podcast about Flame. Of course, by the time this publishes, we may have more information, such as a stronger indicator of who might be responsible.
Although I don't know. With Stuxnet, it's been out for so long and people still don't know.
Although, yeah, both with Stuxnet and with Flame, the most of the fingers are pointing toward Israel and the United States. Again, no smoking gun.
And
there's lots of Flame, but no smoking gun.
Well, and of course, as we know, internet hackers have been known to find ways to point the finger at someone else.
That's true.
They're very good at hiding their tracks and making somebody. Well, the names of these modules are all in English.
Yes.
And somewhat slangy, some of them are slang terms. So, you know, it kind of says, oh, well, somebody who's very familiar with English probably wrote this software.
Yeah. So that's why I'd want to get like, if I were to write some malware, I'd want to get slang in something like Romanian.
Yeah. Well, the penguins in Australia who wrote this software, very sophisticated, and nobody's going to point a flipper at them.
So now you're suggesting it's Linux. I see what you're saying.
Yeah, Tux and his buddies down there.
So, well, I think that wraps up our discussion here. Now, granted, what'll be interesting to see is if we see future outbreaks of malware that follow in Flame's smoking footsteps, because it has proven to be a pretty effective tactic. And of course, you know, we would expect any future form of this sort of attack to be different enough so that it would not immediately trigger suspicion once someone downloaded it.
Mm-hmm.
20 megabyte file is, like you said, that's significant for malware.
Mm-hmm.
It's still not significant compared to, say, a good music file.
Yeah.
But, yeah, you never know. So, guys, be careful out there. Again, don't need to worry about Flame unless you are a high-ranking government official or you run some sort of important facility in the Middle East. But, you know, being careful is always good,
mm-hmm.
no matter what area of life you might fall in. And let us know what you would like us to talk about in future episodes. You can contact us via email. Our address is techstuff@discovery.com. Or let us know on Facebook or Twitter. Our handle there is techstuffhsw. And Chris and I will talk to you again really soon.
Hey, you know, when we recorded this podcast initially,
yes,
we talked about things like who was responsible for the Flame virus.
Saying that it could literally be anyone.
It could literally be anyone. And
anyone
Stuxnet,
in the world.
And it was very similar to Stuxnet.
No connection to Stuxnet at all.
Yeah, but it was awfully similar, and boy, isn't that weird.
Okay, yeah. So as it turns out, since we recorded that podcast, news broke.
Almost, I'm sorry not to interrupt, almost literally right after we recorded this.
Yeah.
What, like a day?
Yeah,
after
exactly. Like it was by the next week, the news had broken that Flame, the code for Flame, resembled to the point of identity part of the code for an early iteration of Stuxnet.
Yes.
Which,
as it turns out,
is an incredibly strong indicator that those responsible for the creation of Flame were also involved in creating Stuxnet. So that narrows down that field dramatically. And as Chris said, when we recorded the podcast, that information had not become public. But now we know that Stuxnet and Flame share enough similar code to give us the confidence in saying the same parties were involved in the creation of both.
Yes.
So that also limits who could have been behind it in other ways. Right now, the accusations have pretty much centered, and they have since Stuxnet became public, they've centered on the United States and Israel.
Yes, and although neither country has officially confirmed anything, the evidence...
I can't imagine that they would.
No, I can't either, but the evidence has pointed even more strongly since then. So,
yeah.
I mean, I would say it's safe that neither Jonathan nor I can confirm or deny any involvement by any government anywhere.
I can deny that I had any involvement.
Yes, that's
as far as I can go.
The evidence is stronger now to suggest that based on the information that we've received in the media. So,
and there was also an interesting discussion that popped up, and I think it's one that we can have a kind of a quick version of it here on our show.
Yeah,
about Stuxnet and Flame both existed on computers for years before anyone else outside of the operations knew anything was going on.
Yeah, and it's amazing because it seems very fresh to us, but it has been out there for quite some time.
So, right, it remained undetected for years. And in the case of Flame, you're talking about a significant file size. It's not a small piece of code.
No.
The argument I've seen says that the era of antivirus software is over, because if antivirus software can't protect you from these things, if they can remain hidden for years, then it is useless. Now, I think that's a premature statement. Yeah, I think that's extremist. Now, I do agree that if code goes undetected, antivirus software is of little help in that case.
For something of that variety. Now, when we're talking about the victims of Flame and Stuxnet, these are not, you know, people sitting at home, you know, checking the web in their email.
No, these are targets.
Yes, these are targeted organizations and governments, and it is more likely that you or I would be targeted by script kiddies sending viruses by email or by phishing. Mm-hmm. Or even spear phishing, for that matter.
Mm-hmm.
So, yes, I think for everyday folks, protecting their computers is still a very, very good idea. Backing them up and using virus protection software.
Yes, yes. And
please back your computer up.
And remember, I mean, these security firms, as soon as they identify malware, they are at work to try and incorporate that into the antivirus software so that you can detect it and prevent it from infecting your computer. Because just because something has become known doesn't mean it's no longer dangerous. It's still dangerous. If it's unknown, then it's extra dangerous because your software may not be able to protect you against it. But yeah, I agree, Chris. I don't think that antivirus software is useless. I think it still has a place. I think you have to couple antivirus software with smart computing practices, and that will help protect you from malware.
Yes.
All right. Well, that wraps up our postscript. So please don't write us telling us that we missed out on that fact. Yeah. We did, but we fixed it.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit HowStuffWorks.com.
Brought to you by the reinvented 2012 Camry. It's ready. Are you?
Running a business is no cakewalk, but with SAP Concur Solutions, you can be ready for anything. You can manage travel, expenses, and AP all on one platform that's packed with AI and best practices, and that delivers it all through an easy, clear, I can't believe how simple that is experience. So, while not much can be done about that guy who never fails to burn the microwave popcorn and stink up the entire office, with SAP Concur, you can easily handle almost anything else. Take control of your business finances today at concur.com. That's concur.com.
I'm Katya Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.
Xumo Play is your destination for endless entertainment. With a diverse lineup of 350-plus live channels, movies, and full TV series, you'll easily find something to watch right away. And the best part? It's all free. Love music? Get lost in the 90s with iHeart 90s, dance away with hip-hop beats, and more on the iHeart Radio music channels. No logins, no signups, no accounts, no hassle. So what are you waiting for? Start streaming at play.xumo.com or download from the app and Google Play stores today. All you can stream with Xumo Play.
Xfinity has free premium networks for everyone this month, no matter what kind of entertainment you love. Addicted to true crime? Catch killer cases and more spine-tingling shows on A&E Crime Central. Crave adventure? Explore Asian action movies on Hayah. Searching for something extreme? Check out skating, snowboarding, and more on Fuel TV Plus, the global home of action sports. And find crowd-pleasing bops on iHeartRadio's Hit Nation playlist. There's new free shows and movies to love every week. Say free this week in your Xfinity voice remote.